This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam. With 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds, Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello? 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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I just motorboated a bag of cookies downstairs, I think.
You're ready to go. This is after F45, though.
Holy man. I did a Peloton this morning. And I got to say, we got a next Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast, we got to talk to Corey about his favorite Peloton class. Because mine, I do the Alex, I think it's like Alex Toussaint or Toussaint. Yeah. Anyways, it is really a lot of hip hop. He's probably my age.
Is
a lot of rap from the 90s really hits home. I like when I'm riding on my bike, I instantly tilt my hat up.
This is interesting.
So the beat goes over my eyes.
We're on a bit of an exercise kick around here, I would say.
Not so much a kick.
Yeah.
This is a lifestyle change. Jordan McDonald came in the office. We transformed our ways.
Yeah, exactly. But so we're doing F45, and actually a guy in the class said to me yesterday, older guy,
yeah,
do you notice that all the music is from the 90s?
Yeah.
I feel like in exercise in general, it's was 90s hip-hop.
Was the best exercise music created in the 90s. That's actually, because honestly, I when I think of gym music, generally speaking, it's still 90s.
Yeah.
And no one in the class, and most people in the class are born in the late 90s, I would say.
Really? For F45?
Maybe early 2000s.
I feel like you're...
Did I overshoot?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think me and you think we're all about the same age in there, but we're like the guys that are about 15 years older than everybody else.
No, I'm aware of that. No, I'm fully aware of that.
Born. Yeah,
born.
Okay, born when I was 20. Right, okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. You're right.
No, I can hear our group's knees clicking. I have no false.
They were babies when the music came out that were.
And they still listen to the music.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Anyways.
It's a testament to what a great decade the 90s was.
I think it was.
For music.
I think it was. Should we go back into the Jordan documentary? Because I feel like everything we wax on about here is from the 90s.
Yeah, but except any rock music. That was a terrible decade.
That was a terrible decade. Yeah.
lost generation.
Yeah. Well, hey, speaking of three doors down from us, Justin Smith. He's actually not. I don't know where his office is, but he's from Hawkeye Wealth. He's the president. He's one of, I really, really enjoy having Justin on the show. He comes on kind of biannually or so, but it's been a while since we've had him on.
I feel like it's been a while since Justin Smith has been on the show, but he's definitely past guest fan favorite. a few things about Justin. One is Hawkeye Wealth is basically, the exciting thing about having Justin on, I would say, is Hawkeye Wealth is looking for investment opportunities for its clients day in, day out, 24/7. They're looking all over North America for a variety of different real estate and not real estate related deals, which is always exciting just to hear his thought on where we're at, inflation, where the opportunities are, how those opportunities have changed over the last couple of years. But also, he's just a really insightful guy.
Right.
Really nice, insightful guy.
Yeah, I think the I think Hawkeye Wealth is really for him being a deal finder, right? Because he's monitoring markets in the U.S. He's monitoring markets in Canada, in Western Canada, definitely in BC. And he highlights kind of finding deals, talks about his process. He also talks about where he sees the opportunity in the market. We even have him make some bold predictions. So it's a great episode today. I don't know what's going on with me. I feel like
you might be having a stroke.
It's the F45 cookie combination really does it for me. You know, in thinking about 90s music, this is a Brady D, producer of the show, was in a metal band, not from the 90s,
right.
I think from the 2000s.
But yeah.
I actually
have one of his picks.
Do you?
I do.
He had custom picks.
He had
this
custom
is a true
picks.
Story, right?
That's how popular he was.
He had
custom picks.
So he would throw them away at the concerts.
That's my understanding.
He was in a band that I think
and all
is
the
still
teenage
going.
Boys would jump for them, I think.
Right.
Because I think really he was in a metal band. I think it skewed
popular
heavily to teenage boys.
Yeah. Well, and also probably people that like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. Because the band had that. There's like a popular video. We should link to it in the show notes.
Right.
But there's a video of like Brady D shirtless with like spikes on, like wearing like football shoulder pads with spikes.
Yeah, yeah.
Doing like solos in like the middle
like
of like a
Mad Max with like what is Toot from Hercules? It's like
I don't know. Yeah. But it's
like it's got a boy body but a horse.
Oh yeah. He's like a centaur in this
centaur,
video. He's basically a centaur. But Brady D is like wailing on like a guitar that has like, you know, a million different angles, and like it looks like
it's actually incredible.
It is incredible. But this reminds me of the story. I'm driving home. So Brady lives in Strathcona as well. I'm driving home. I see Brady D. So first of all, I see Brady D on a phone right by my house, and he's kind of pointing, like waving at someone. I go, what's going on here?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, this police van like rips by doing like in an alley doing like 70. So like, you know, how it's like you look like you're driving fast in an alley when you're doing like 20.
Yeah, yeah.
So it like rips by, almost hits me. Then I'm like, I get out of the way and it's going and it's racing anyways. So I pull in and Brady's there like looking like, and he's a big guy. He's a huge guy. He's 6'5" or something.
Probably gotta be
6'3"
at least.
He's big. Friendliest giant on the planet, though. But definitely, I feel like Brady, if he wanted to rip a phone book in half, he could rip a phone book in
Absolutely.
Half. So anyways, long story short, turns out a guy had stolen a bunch of stuff, and I don't know what he stole exactly, but from the Assembly. So Assembly, the pre-sale project that we've had on the program before.
Right by the Pink Palace Gelato.
Yeah. So in Strathcona, kind of just east of the tracks, right by Admiral School there, Seymour Admiral. Long story short, guy had stolen a bunch of stuff and taken off. Brady chases him down, calls the police. It was like Serpico.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't tell you this story. Anyways, but yeah, he was like sweating, did have a beer in his hand. I was like, do you do anything without a tall boy in your head? But it was just kind of funny. But anyways, shout out to Brady D, metalhead and
hero.
And hero for the developer. Really.
Way to stand up for the development community, Brady.
No, but I'm fair enough. The guy stole a bunch of stuff from the site. I was thinking anyways, but yeah. I don't know if that's a great story or not, but let's run with it.
Well, here we go. We're with Justin Smith, President, CEO of Hawkeye Wealth. Like I said, past guest, fan favorite. This is a really great conversation.
It is.
I feel like because it really captures the trends, right? The trends of the market right now, post-COVID, inflation, where the opportunities lie. But before we get to that, Adam, of course, we are sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, you want to see things like Ryan Serhant talking about how he loves Vancouver, head over.
Did he actually mention that?
I think he did. I saw it on Instagram. I didn't actually catch it live, but... Yeah. I did see something.
Great resources like for the agents.
Yeah, fantastic resources. Head over to oakland.com/join. Type in VRP 2020. That is oakland.com/join. Type in VRP 2020. Not only will you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, which is great, you get a huge incentive for heading over to oakland.com/join. VRP 2020 is the code. And let's cut to our talk with Justin Smith.
I love this conversation. There are so many takeaways. This is one definitely for the books. Enjoy. Okay, so we're here with Justin Smith, president of Hawkeye Wealth. How you doing, Justin?
Doing fantastic. Thank you. How are you, gentlemen?
Very well, Justin. We should say past guest, fan favorite, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I can't remember exactly when that was.
It was years ago because I was in the Main Street corridor. I was in Mount Pleasant building our house at the time.
Oh, yeah. And you, in the condo.
In the condo. And the condo, the bunker.
Yeah, that was like seven iterations of the podcast ago.
We had a lot of people in that bunker, including you. And everyone came down and basically said like, oh, really? Should I even be on this show?
Why am I here?
Why am
I here?
And I've
made a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And how, this is under 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was like when you had the fake, like the call, like, oh yeah, there's an emergency. I got to get out of here. Sorry guys. We'll have to reschedule, but clearly you came back. So you must be okay with it.
I was kind of into it.
Good.
Well, thanks for your time anyway. maybe as a starting point, Justin, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself for those who heard you the first time and can't recall, and for new listeners?
Sure. Yeah, my name's Justin Smith. I've been in the Lower Mainland here for about just over 10 years now. Grew up Northern BC, Quesnel, Williams Lake. Not sure if you're familiar with those areas yet, till I was about 17, and finished up my last year of high school in Kelowna. Did my undergrad in psychology at UBC Okanagan, and did a little bit of traveling after that. Lived in Quebec as well for a couple of years, and came back here, finished out my degree, my MBA here in Vancouver, and shortly after got into real estate and really haven't looked back since.
Student of Andrei Pavlov, as I understand.
Yes. I very much enjoyed him, having him as your guest. I don't want to say he was different than he was as a teacher, but he kind of was. It was nice to see that other side of him. So yeah, I'd like to chat with him again at some point here it's just a different dynamic. It's like politicians. Once they're not politicians anymore,
yeah,
the conversations are just the best. And I don't know if teachers are the same.
Right.
So I get
less,
the sense that
less guarded.
Yeah. They're just people, right?
We like to think that him and Davidoff, when they're on the program, they loosen up a bit.
That's the goal.
That's the goal, at least. But no, it's great having them on, for sure.
No, Andre, if you're listening, sure. I think you did it. I think you did. He loosened up for sure.
I don't think he listens to the show.
Oh, he listens for sure.
he's a busy guy for sure. So, Justin, I didn't know the Quebec component of your trajectory. What were you doing out there?
It was volunteer service, actually, for a couple of years full time. I did 1 year of university, and then from 19 to 21. Did 2 years, yeah, full time. So it was every day, 6:30 in the morning till about 9:30 at night, and doing volunteer work specifically with the Spanish community. So I learned Spanish in Quebec.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's most people go to Quebec to learn Spanish, isn't that it?
It makes complete sense.
So how and I recall the origin story, but just for our listeners, why real estate?
I actually got into it a little bit in a sideways manner. I was, after I did my MBA here at Simon Fraser, I graduated. The market was actually quite soft for jobs. It was a lot harder than I thought. I thought everyone would be banging down my door to hire me for, you know, large amounts of money. And it was very difficult. It was a challenging time in my life. And there was a point actually where I had about 6 months of a gap in my resume. I'm like, I better go do something to beef up my resume. So I went to apply for a volunteer position, And I remember going in and getting interviewed, and they just needed some marketing work done. And I'm thinking, I think I have the skills. I've got my MBA, and probably a lot of MBAs have said that about themselves before. I've got an MBA. Why wouldn't they want me? And anyways, that was probably one of the low points in my career. Is I got the email back explaining that I had not been selected for the position to work for free. So I took a job for a little while, working with a food company. And at the time, my landlord explained that he was going to a real estate conference. So I went with him to the real estate conference, and it blew me away that the topic could attract upwards, I think, was probably 500, 600, 700 people in the room. And I just didn't know this existed. And so I sat down for the day and listened to a lot of the different presenters, and it just opened my eyes. And I just liked the energy of the people. There was a gentleman, I think also a previous podcast guest, Dave Steele, who was was one of the presenters that day.
Huge, huge fan of Dave Steele.
Yeah, I actually, he was talking about some deals in China at the time that had nothing to do with real estate. And I remember making a joke to my landlord, like, did this guy not get the memo? It's like, this has nothing to do with real estate. What's he doing at a real estate conference? But then he gets up and gives the presentation. And I just thought it was really cool what he was doing. And he just had an excellent energy about him. So I approached him afterwards, and I happened to have my notebook there. I happened to have a couple resumes left over from my job search days. So I handed Dave a resume and got coffee and got into the real estate business a couple of weeks later. So here we are.
And as I recall, you started selling real estate for Western Canadian Properties Group. Is that right?
Yeah, you got it.
And you hit the cover off the ball, as they say.
Well, it was very close to not doing so. It's really hard when you leave a structured position to go into an unstructured position. You probably are very familiar with this as realtors. And I believe I might have even mentioned on the last podcast that Netflix was starting to become more of a thing at this time. And so you go from having all of this oversight to truly having to motivate yourself. And that's for some people, maybe that's easy. For me, that wasn't easy. I didn't have the habits in place to go and do good work. So when I was first working with Dave, I don't think it started off all that well. And my wife was letting me know that it wasn't starting off all that well, because it was 100% commission position and I wasn't making any money and she was working a full-time job. So anyways, I remember we were driving down the highway one day and she looked at me in the eyes and said, Justin, you got to get a job. And I just remember thinking, honey, I can't go back. I just can't, because I really enjoyed having that freedom, even if I didn't know what to do with it quite yet. So I promised her at that point that I would make $10,000 in commissions that month. And if I didn't make the $10,000 in commissions, I would go and get a job. And got to work, made one sale, and then another realtor, brought me in on a couple of deals as well. And I made $10,035. that month. And so, the joke is, I was $35 away from not being here today. And then there was a little bit of confidence starting to grow. And on the next project here, the belief started to come, and was able to sell 14 units in the next project for Dave. Wow. It was a great time of growth in my life. And then you kind of, how it is, you get a little confidence that you can do something, and then it becomes more fun, and then you just want to do more of it. And that was really where it all started for me.
I would imagine Dave is a great boss, just because
mentor.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite stories of
Dave Steele. You felt the need to clarify there.
Yeah. Exactly. I remember Matt and I were doing a talk. We were guests on a panel for the investment series that they do. And there was a public messenger, a public place that people could comment. And then there was a private area that people could comment. And Dave Steele, as we were presenting, was just chirping us in the private one.
He was
making jokes about us as we were presenting. And it was totally throwing me off. I was reading them and then I'd start laughing a little bit. But he is a funny, funny guy for sure. But
every once in a while, you know how it is. You go through your life and you look back at the people who have been there for you, or have been important or instrumental in making key decisions or helping you get to the next level. And Dave was the right guy at the right place for me at that time of my life. And I'm very, very grateful to have had him as a mentor. And still, you know, on occasion when stuff gets really crazy, you know, Dave's a good guy to call because he's seen a lot. So.
Right on. Yeah. He's seen more than most, that's for sure. But what I'm curious about, and we've kind of shifting gears a little bit, because you're the founder and president of Hawkeye Wealth, right? There's a transition in the story here. There has to be, from being on the floor selling homes to running a very successful company. Can we find out maybe a little bit about how you came up with the idea to start Hawkeye Wealth, what Hawkeye Wealth does, and that kind of transition away from, you know, being in commission sales on the floor to running a successful company?
Sure. Yeah. And in 2014, 2015, things were hopping up in Northeast BC, Fort St. John, Dawson Creek. There was a lot of talk of LNG. I had Site C Dam, which hadn't started at that point. So there was a lot of excitement in the area. At the same time as doing the Northeast BC stuff, I started getting involved in raising capital for multifamily projects, big apartment buildings down in Phoenix, primarily. And as 2015 kind of rolled on, the whole resource market was taking a bit of a breath. And Phoenix, of course, was on fire, literally and figuratively. And Todd. So it just made sense to spend more of my efforts there. And a lot of our clients that had also done the Northeast BC stuff thought it was a good place to have some money as well. So I already had a bit of a client base and was able to go start introducing these private equity multifamily real estate deals to our investors. And you know, they went well, so why not keep doing it, right? So we did a lot of deals in you know, 2014, 15, 16. In 2017, when I was doing this here, the reason or what I was relying on was something called the Northwest exemption, which means that you didn't have to be registered or I guess licensed maybe in your world to go and raise capital. In 2017, it became clear that I was going to need to get registered if I wanted to continue raising capital. So at that point, I had one of two choices. Do I go and join somebody else's brokerage, or do I create, brokerage isn't the term, but I guess I'm using the words, you know,
right?
You guys are familiar with the business model. It's the same business model in my world here. It's called an exempt market dealer, but it's like a brokerage. Or do we start our own? And it's much easier to join somebody else's. It is much easier. It's less money. It's less stress. There's a, you know, we're audited annually. So, you know, this, when the CRA gives you an audit, it's a, you know, it's a bad year for you personally here. Well, we get an audit every year.
Year in, year out.
Every year.
It just gives me anxiety.
Yeah,
just
hearing that. Yeah. Audit. Yeah, exactly.
Everybody just shut down.
That's why people don't start their own, right? And then it took, you know, it takes a while to get it started too. You know, you heard it might take upwards of a year to go and start your own. There's a lot of paperwork that has to be filed and a process to go through, right? So ultimately, when I looked at it, there were two deciding factors for me and why we decided to start our own versus join another. And the first was control over the product. I didn't want anybody else to tell me or control what we offered to clients. And I viewed that as a risk, because even if you have, you know, some other exempt market dealers out there, I might like some of the deals that they do. And then I might really dislike some of the other deals that they do, or think that, you know, they're too risky or just not for me. Well, even if you don't represent those products, you're still painted. We still have risk by associating yourself with that brand, right? So I said, you know what? I want to control that. And then number two is we want to control over the client experience. You have to get a number of other people involved. Sometimes, you know, we've got a lot of compliance and different people that might be a touch point for the client along the way. Each company has their different processes, their different template emails that they have. And the client experience is just paramount in this business. So I wanted to control that. I want our clients to love doing business with us. And I just couldn't find a way to do it to my satisfaction without setting it up myself. So the decision was made. I was in the middle of a 48-state RV tour in the U.S. and just ripping around. I think I was in Florida at the time. And just, you know, sitting there looking at the ocean saying, yeah, let's do this. So started that process in 2017. In May of 2018, got the notification from the BC Securities Commission that we were ready to go. So haven't looked back since.
So what does Hawkeye Wealth do then?
Yeah, so we help people get involved in private equity, real estate, and debt deals. And we really do that by doing three things for the client. The first is we help them identify strategies that we think will outperform over the long term. And by strategies, I mean geographically, where do we want to invest within North America? What cities? And then within those cities, what asset classes do we want to go after? Do we want industrial? Do we want multifamily or retail or office? Or do we prefer to be lending money on the debt side? Also, you know, do you want to build it from the ground up or do you want to buy existing assets? So those are all questions you ask on you know, identifying a high level strategy that we think will outperform. I really like I believe it's the Jeff Bezos approach where you're trying to find things that you think won't change for the next 10 years. You know, and trying to start figure out where the opportunity is because of change, well, it's easier to build a strategy around things that don't change. So that is what we're looking for usually when we're identifying strategies because we want some runway. We don't want to just do one deal in one strategy for our clients. We want to be able to roll it again and again and again for as long as we can over the years. And we did that with multifamily in the Southern US. And then after that, we want to identify the teams that are the best at executing on those strategies. So we don't operate the deals ourselves. We're looking for operators that can execute these strategies at the highest level for our clients. And we view this as literally the most important decision we can make at Hawkeye. They're making decisions on our clients' behalf and very much Hawkeye's brand and reputation is dependent on those decisions and how well they execute the business model. So that's the second thing we do is we identify the teams. And then third, we vet those teams' deals. So those teams, let's say they have a strategy of doing industrial or multifamily. As each industrial or multifamily deal comes down the pipe, they send you an investor package. And on those, there's usually a pro forma. So we go and we do our own independent due diligence. We don't work technically for the issuer. We work for the client. So we're independent of these groups, even though we have good relationships with them. And the idea there is to go and make sure that the assumptions make sense. Performers all look great. They all look great. Every single one, you know, and our job is to find out how real or realistic those performers are. So those are the three things we do. And then clients, you know, depending on their own appetites and strategies and financial wherewithal, we'll introduce them to certain deals that we think might be a fit for them.
So if I'm working with Hawkeye, just so I understand, I'm a client of yours. I have, you know, $500,000 that I'm looking to invest. Do I have that in my account and I'm watching for emails from you? Like, hey, here's a deal. You know, this looks good. And then, you know, maybe I put $100K there and then, hey, here's another deal. Okay, this looks good. I'm going to pass on that one though. Or do I give you the funds and then, you know, you tell me after, hey, you know, good news, we've done X on X return and you're invested in a car wash now.
Yeah, no, you hand me all your money and then I go to the Bahamas. No, so we actually don't manage client funds directly. Our job in the world is to go and find the deals. Once we've found the deals, it's then to go and make sure they make sense for you. So we walk every client through what's called a know your client process to ensure that the deal is suitable for you as well. If you say that, you know, let's say you've got that 500 grand and you want to go do a deal and you say, hey, Justin, I want to give you this 500 grand. There's this deal here that looks like it's going to be a 2-year deal, but I need to make sure I have that 500 grand back in 2 years because I need to give a down payment to my kid or whatever it is, right? We would just say, don't invest that with us, right? Suitability is a big part of what we do. So we walk the client through the know your client questionnaire. We also have to ensure that clients are eligible to invest, not just that it's suitable, but that the investment that you're eligible for the investment. Many investments in our world require that you be an accredited investor. And there's many ways that you can qualify as an accredited investor, though there's usually three that are the primary ways. The first is that you have over $200,000 a year in income and that you've had it for the previous 2 years and you think you're going to make it this year as well, or combined with your spouse 300K in income. The second is through what's called the net financial assets test, which is you add up all of your stocks, your cash, any kind of other securities that you own. Most of the stuff in your RSPs or TFSAs will be go towards this, but it doesn't include any real estate. So if you have investment properties that have equity in them, you wouldn't add those up here, or you wouldn't include your principal residence. So if this amount adds up to over $1 million, that automatically qualifies you as an accredited investor. And then, or the final test is, let's just say you've got a ton of real estate, but not as much net financial assets. If your total net worth were over $5 million, that would also qualify you as an accredited investor. And you don't have to qualify for all three of those. You would just have to qualify under one of those. So that's the process. We first take the client through, and as long as everything looks suitable and they're eligible to invest, we would walk you through the deal, the subscription, the paperwork, and everything. And at the end, you would write a check directly to the issuer. So we don't manage your funds. You'd write a check directly to them, though we would be your point of contact.
Okay, so that all makes sense, Justin. I think somebody out there is wondering, so how do you guys actually, like, how does the business actually make money? Is there an annual fee? Is it commission-based? Like, how does Hawkeye Wealth actually keep the lights on?
So for us, our general principle is, as often as we can, we want the client to pay no more to purchase a product through Hawkeye than they would if they went directly to the issuer or operator of the deal. So far, in the vast majority of the cases, we've been able to do that. There's occasions where it's not that we wouldn't, it's that we can't. And I don't need to go into that on the show, but that's the principle of it, is that we're paid by the issuer for raising the capital. And there's no disadvantage to doing so. That's kind of our value proposition, right? Is we're independent, and we're a one-stop shop for a lot of different deals. So instead of having to build a whole bunch of relationships and going out and doing due diligence and trying to find these other groups and then find out when they have deals too, when they're dropping, well, you talk to us, and that's the service we provide. And we do that independently here with vetted deals that we think might be suitable for you.
So I'm thinking about the market right now, especially COVID, like kind of once COVID hit March 2020, call it, we saw kind of the steroid injection into the real estate market. Prices are kind of at all-time highs throughout all of North America. Is it hard to find deals right now? And
are you in cash, Justin?
No, just joking. Is it getting harder to find deals, I guess?
I do have quite a bit of, I am mostly in cash, but it's not for the reasons, it's not because it's hard to find deals, it's because of our business model. A lot of our business model is we get paid when our investors get paid. So starting the business in 2018, we've got a lot of deals that are performing very well that we just haven't been paid for yet. So I like to keep a lot of cash. It's very important to me at Hawkeye to be able to afford to say no to a deal. And it's really hard to say no to a deal when you've got no cash.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So anyways, and I know you're saying it kind of in jest, but it's hard. It's very hard to find deals out there. I mean, you guys maybe went through something similar. March of last year hit and it was like, what's going on? Are we going to lose? Your mind can actually downward spiral pretty quick when March hit last year. You're kind of like, am I going to die?
Yeah. Is this the end?
Yeah. There was a whole bunch of different stuff rolled in there, right? And usually you'd go and get together with the people you love to kind of talk about these things. And it was just weird. It was a scary time. And then of course, May, June, July rolls around and you're like, okay, well, I don't think we're going to die, you know, business or health. And then, you know, September, October, November roll around and you're like, I'm not sure, but I think we're making a lot of money. Yeah. And it was just the weirdest year that way. And what's happened, and you guys know the story of it here, the government got to work in, I can't remember whether it was March or April or May, but in pretty short order, they got to work firing up the printing presses and or whatever the digital equivalent is these days, and you know, a few keystrokes. There had to have been somebody at a computer pushing a few keys
just to add a few zeros
yeah, to it.
Exactly.
I wonder who that guy is. Yeah, you should get him on your podcast.
We got that guy on the show.
I want to hear that story. But what happens is, you know, the fears of inflation come, And when people believe there's going to be inflation, they want hard assets. And there is just a pile of money that's poured into real estate. And what we found, in particular in the asset classes that we're involved in, we primarily are involved in apartment buildings, both buying existing and developing new. So we're primarily involved in multifamily and the other, and we're also involved in industrial. And those two asset classes, more than any other, not only did they get the money as usual that was pouring into them, a lot of the money that might have usually gone into office or might have gone into retail said, you know, maybe you know, we want to be a little bit more in industrial and multifamily. So that's pushed up the asset prices in the space we operate even more. So, you know, maybe as a little bit of an anecdote for it, we saw one deal in February of last year that a group had landed. This is right before COVID started. And it was a multifamily deal. They bought the apartment building at had under contract about $120,000 per unit. They decided, and I think it was probably a very prudent decision at the time to back out of the deal. Probably cost them a little bit of money to back out of the deal too. I still don't think that was a bad decision. And funny enough, almost a year and a half later, the same deal comes across our desk. They've won it again, but they haven't won it at 120 a door. They've won it at 160 a door. And it's incredible. It's incredible. And you're kind of conflicted because on the one hand, you're kind of doing a dance for all the real estate you own, right? And yeah. On the other, to your point, you know, it's like, what do I do next, right? So the way I frame it is this. I still think on the basis of probability, real estate's a great place to be. Do you think that the printing presses, do you think the guy's going to wake up tomorrow and not add another zero? I think he's going to wake up tomorrow. He's going to come press the zero and go, I don't know what that guy does. You got to get him on. and it could be a girl too. But I think they're going to keep printing money. And if they keep printing the money, do I think money's going to keep finding its way into real estate? I do. What's weird about it this time is I don't think I want to go all in on that because the world's just weird. The world's just weird. And if the last year's taught me anything, it's you need to build your portfolio and be prepared for the unexpected. Because I think being a prognosticator is overrated, you know? And so you need to, I'm a bit more of a believer in the Ray Dalio all season approach. And I think that's a big takeaway from COVID. So one thing that we're doing as well is we're actually getting much more involved in the debt side. So mortgage funds, not sure. Are you guys familiar with the product?
Have we had anybody on talking about?
We haven't had it was clearly a lot. I think people have talked about investing, you know, like Mark Ting has talked about it.
Oh, right, and, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, so, what? But maybe let's
unpack it a bit.
Please.
Sure. And you know, maybe we can get you a solid, we're pretty well connected in that area. So if you guys would like a future guest, I think it's something important to know about. So it's important to understand how equity and debt are different. They're completely different beasts. To give your audience an example, let's say you buy a house for $100,000 and you put down your down payment of, for easy math, let's just say it's $40,000. And, you know, a couple of years later, for whatever reason, you got to sell and you're moving out of town or you got to sell it. And after all of the expenses, you only pull out 80 grand. You know, so you lose a little bit of money on it. So you put in 40 originally on your down payment and you lost 20 grand on the deal, right? So that person that put in 40 has lost 50% of their capital. Now, the debt holder, the person that lent the $60,000 for the deal, their experience is very different. They have lost $0 on that deal and they've earned interest along the way. Now, what do? You forfeit the upside. And I still think that there's some upside on the basis of probability. You know, I think there's some upside, but there's something to be said for that downside protection in the event that the markets drop as well. So I kind of view it as a, you know, yeah, let's play some offense, but let's think defense too, because the world's just a messed up place. So we've been raising a lot of capital into mortgage funds, particularly mortgage funds that are focused on low loan to value mortgages, because you know, if you only lend out 60 grand on the $100,000 place, it's a different risk profile than if you lend out 90 grand on the $100,000 property. So low loan to value, primarily first mortgages, usually in larger markets as well, where you have more liquidity. So our clients have really liked that as an option too. So for the money that they don't want to put all in to the markets, but it's sitting there in the bank account getting what? Like
nothing.
pretty darn close, right? Or GI, it's just doing nothing. So at least this way, you're keeping your head above water with inflation. And you know you've got some more defensive characteristics of the investment.
What kind of returns, like in terms of interest rates, or what kind of returns are you seeing on those defensive plays?
Yeah, well, it can really vary depending on the strategy. You can actually go and get returns into probably the mid high teens. Some funds out there are doing really aggressive stuff, but they're doing it high loan to value. They're doing it on land or on construction financing. And less established developers. You can, on the highest end of the risk spectrum, that's what you're going after. For us, we prefer not to go after that because we'd rather have the equity. For our where we want to make a lot of money is by actually owning the real estate. That's our preferred play. For defensive characteristics, again, with those first mortgages, lower loan to value. You're more around that 6 to 8% is really what you're going after.
One thing that jumps out at me, Justin, from what you said earlier was the idea of looking for, you know, plays that are not going to change for at least a decade. Clearly, real estate is one of your comfort zones for sure. Debt financing as well sounds like something you've kind of moved into, and the two I think really go well together. Are there any other areas that Hawkeye is looking at? Or are you just sticking with the tried and true?
So we very much like multifamily and we very much like industrial. We're in the middle of an industrial deal. In fact, it just hit my inbox last night and I'm very excited because they don't come around as often. If we're all making different bets on what's going to happen. And one that I really like is industrial. I just, e-commerce, is that going to change over the next 10 years? Are people going to buy more online in 10 years or are they going to buy less online in 10 years?
Probably more.
I'm not a prognosticator. Did we get it right?
I don't know. But it's all probabilities, right?
Yeah.
It's all probabilities. If I'm looking at something that I personally believe is going to be true, I mean, if I'm wrong, then we're, you know, maybe we're in some trouble here, but I'm looking for the things that are the highest probability of being true. And I view the rise of e-commerce as a big thing. Movie content, video content, that all gets produced in warehouses. There's a huge new facility being produced out in Langley, about 600,000 square feet. Back in the day, I can bring back Netflix. Back in the day, you were always looking at third-party content on Netflix, right? It wasn't Netflix original content. If you were to scroll through Netflix today,
it's almost all. Yeah, I'm an expert on Netflix. I can answer this one. well, that's the thing, though. It seems like between Disney Plus, Prime, Netflix,
Crave,
we're watching almost now exclusive content to all of those service providers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's what it is. If we talk about any of the shows that we're watching right now, almost none of them are third party.
Yeah, it's exploded. And we like particularly the industry in the Lower Mainland. I mean, Vancouver's a movie production hub. It's big time. It's really big business in this town, right? So it's riding that wave. Vancouver has one of the lowest, if not the lowest, at least right now, vacancy rates for industrial in North America. We're here. It's happening in our own backyard. And then usually what would your solutions be? Well, either A, you bring in more land. Well, agricultural land reserve. You know, people think there's a lot of land out there. There's not. There's not a lot of land. And I remember a number of years ago, a gentleman from Port Metro Vancouver was speaking at a Vancouver Board of Trade event. And he was talking about how he thought within 10 years, Metro Vancouver would be out of industrial land. And so, you know, going back to my point on what strategies do we want to pursue, you know, a light bulb went on my head. It just, why are we not buying more industrial? And then that's what we proceeded to do, right? So we've ridden that wave. And then the other thing is, you know, it's not like residential where occasionally, well, you don't have enough land, just build more stories, just densify, right? And that's not easy to do with industrial. So, you know, it's not like Asia where they've got little trucks that they can easily bring up the ramps and they don't need much of a turn radius. And in North America, it's very difficult to build multi-story industrial. So you kind of go and add it all up for the increased demand. And on top of that, Vancouver population is growing. So it not only are the people that are already here buying more online, they're also, there's more of them. So I don't know. Yeah, you add it all up. And then the cherry on top for me is the government interfering less on it. If the rents over the next 3 years, if the rents in residential were to raise 70%, what happens?
You try and get rid of a tenant?
I don't think you'll be able to. It's we're getting into pitchfork territory.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you think the policies being proposed federally might be a little bit silly right now. I'll just wait until rents are 80% higher, right? How many, we're in the middle of a campaign. I don't know if that'll age well on this podcast, but how many of those promises are about capping industrial rents? You know, I think the Liberals had upwards of 500 promises last time I looked online. I haven't looked at all 500, but I would venture a guess that none of them were about capping industrial rents.
Right.
Huh. So one thing that I'm just thinking about here is it seems like you're, in terms of industrial and multifamily, a lot of the multifamily Hawkeye's involved in is in certain markets in the U.S., right? So Phoenix, as I understand, I think you guys have done deals in Texas, Atlanta. And then it sounds like, though, industrial, you're staying closer to home in Vancouver, at least from what you're saying today.
Yeah, that's a coincidence. We just happen, it's not just because it's our backyard. Our backyard just happens to be one of the best places to invest in industrial. As far as, I mean, you might get a glut here for, you know, as they build it out over the next few years, but eventually you run out of land. And if you can afford to hold on to the property, yeah, we like it. The multifamily stuff down in the US, we've kind of got two different strategies. In the US, it's about value add multifamily. So what's value add multifamily? Well, big apartment buildings, for those not familiar with the asset class, they're basically priced similarly to businesses, where if you have an apartment building that produces less income and you have another apartment building that produces more income, your one that produces more income is worth more. And even if you take the same asset, let's say you find, so the name of the game is to find an asset that's underoperated, that's not producing income to its potential, go in, and that's why they call it value add. You add value. And is that through operations? Is that through renovations? Is that through washers and dryers? And you've probably had guests talk about this a little bit in the past. That's what literally makes your building worth more. And we like that strategy in the US for a few different reasons. One of the big ones, to your point, is it's more landlord friendly. It's easier to execute down there. If you try and execute that strategy in you know, particularly BC and Ontario, it's a lot harder to do. You just have, it's almost just a waiting game, right? You wait for them to move out. And when they move out, the next one comes in.
Yeah, and it might be a 20-year turnaround.
And for the people that are willing to wait the 20 years, maybe that's the play, right? It's not bad, but you can just do it quickly down in the southern U.S. In BC, we've done some deals and we expect to do some more. We like residential here, though we prefer doing it as a development play, not buying existing. And the value gets added by the fact that, you know, you can build it for less than you could buy it brand new. So that's how you get the value out of it. And there's just a lot of institutions that have appetite still for multifamily in Vancouver. So you develop it and then ideally you sell it to an institution. And again, things that aren't going to change in Vancouver in the next 10 years. Earthquake's really the only big one I can think of that does weird stuff to Vancouver. But again, I don't even know what that does. Maybe that makes it better. COVID just made me learn that you just don't know necessarily what happens in certain situations. But is Vancouver still going to be a desirable place to live in 10 years? Yeah, I think so, right? Like, what's going to change there in the next 10 years?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about how we've talked about this quite a bit, but I mean, I'm very bullish on the Okanagan, even though with the fires. But the conversations that we've had around the fires is it could put a lot more pressure on Vancouver and Victoria with people that just don't want to deal with this anymore, right? And that want to move to the cities. Yep. And want to be closer to areas that are not burning all summer long.
Yep, yep.
You know, I mean, there's a lot, yeah. And you think about it, like there's a lot of reasons why Vancouver could even see with climate change, and I doubt an earthquake, I don't know how that would pan out. But with climate change, you think even we're going to become even more desirable.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird situation, wasn't it, recently with the fires, because you're seeing it on the news and on TV, and I don't know how this, there was maybe one or two bad days of smoke here.
Well, yeah, and compared to a couple years ago when we had, and I think that was all coming up from Oregon, we had some bad smoke, but this year it was kind of striking, right? That you'd drive into the interior and it was like you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, and then you come back to Vancouver, it's like, oh, it's a beautiful summer.
We had we were using an air purifier, and it's got like a light that notifies you when there's like polluted air or smoky air. And I think that light went on once for about 5 minutes. Like, it wasn't bad at all this year. So,
I mean, thinking about this, though, maybe a question for you, Justin, is, you know, it sounds like COVID has impacted kind of the way you think about long-term strategy and short-term strategy in terms of investing. And rightly so, I guess. 2021, for a lot of people, I think has been, if you were thinking about climate change before, you're thinking a lot more about it now and how that impacts, how it seems to be. The impacts are greater and coming quicker than a lot of people thought, right? I'm just thinking about, you know, the Arizonas of the world, the places that you like multifamily. And I'm just, and I don't know, I don't know, because there's no forest there. So maybe Arizona performs very well in climate change. But I'm wondering about how you are factoring in terms of risk mitigation, a change in climate.
Yeah. So one of the best things and worst things I ever did was subscribe to The Economist. Because it's so well written, right? It's well researched. It's well written. They just don't seem to have as much of an agenda. Everyone's got an agenda. Just seems a little bit
more objective.
It's got that old school English objectivity.
Yeah, at least a little bit more. And you know, on the bad side, though, it's like when you look at it, it's probably about 90% why the world sucks. That's written very well. But there's some good stuff on this, to your point, with Phoenix. You know, I read a good article on the Colorado River and how they divided up the Colorado River between a number of different states and even Mexico, right? And how, you know, what their assumptions were on how much water they thought there would be and how that's changed over the years. And certainly it's something that we keep an eye on. It's important. And how are you going to have society without water, right? We go through a due diligence checklist on every single deal that we do, and part of it is climate. And it's not just climate, it's actually categorized as natural disaster, because I don't really care whether, you know, there's a 90% chance of an earthquake, that's just as much of a problem for me as climate change, right? So it's certainly a risk that has to be considered. It can also be an opportunity, and I'm not saying this is a strategy we'll pursue, but again, on The Economist here, I just read a very well articulated article on how very lucrative crops that previously wouldn't have grown in northern climates are now able to grow them here. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for farmland, right? Like there's maybe even a wave of opportunity from climate change, and it's not, I'd rather that wave not exist.
Yeah, of course.
Quite frankly, though, you know, there could be some opportunity there. We're about to meet up with a group that's done a lot of farmland here in the next week or two, and just learn a little bit more about that business model, because again, you know, we're trying to figure out those strategies and that we think are going to be good for the next 10 years. And if you're thinking about things that won't change, everyone says, well, the climate is changing. I'm like, yeah, but what's not changing is the change. It's almost becoming something more that you can bank, sadly, that you can bank on. Is the world going to be hotter or colder in 10 years from now?
Yeah.
Like, and so if you have a belief that it's going to be hotter, it's what do you do, right? So that's,
yeah, and it's funny because I think people will live through in risky places, right? I mean, there's risky places all over. It's the insurance. That's the biggest thing. And that was the thing that caught me off guard this year, is Boza Cedar Sky couldn't get insurance because there was a fire within whatever it is, 50 kilometers of Squamish.
One water in Kelowna
couldn't get insurance because there was several fires within 50 kilometers. Penticton, all over, right? People not being able to complete on projects.
Right. And then the question becomes, you know, there's still wildly successful launches happening
in Kelowna right now, for instance. And it's like,
well,
and
in the, and what, in the insurance freeze moment, there was two projects that both sold out within 72 hours.
Right. So then I guess the question is the market factoring in climate change or not right now?
And like, I don't know how we got to become an environmental podcast here, but it's an interesting conversation.
It is an interesting conversation. It's interesting to just think about, I go back to kind of risk mitigation, right? In terms of just, you know, I was just curious to see how you're thinking about
it. If it's not pricing it in, it doesn't have a long enough, people aren't thinking long-term enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And half your job is almost being an actuary in a lot of ways, because you have to be like, you're looking at risk. All day long.
Probabilities.
Yeah.
Probabilities, right? And to your point, it's, I guess, hot tip for those in the Okanagan markets or where I think places that are really fire prone, like it's really nice to close in March. It's really nice to close in November, to your point, because, I don't want to say you can count on forest fires, but, you know, it's not like you've got a 10% risk of having a forest fire within 50 kilometers of you here. It's higher than that now. I've got a brother in Penticton, actually, who bought a new place last month. And he happens to be an insurance broker. And you know what he did is before his close, I don't know how he did it, but maybe the audience can contact their insurance broker or I'll hook you up with my brother. There we go. Nice little plug for my brother, Adam. But you can actually, he was able to get insurance before he closed. So he saw the writing on the wall and said, I think that I'm not going to be able to get an insurance policy in another month or two. And then landed it and was able to close business as usual.
Wow. Well, it's funny because it used to be every few years there'd be fires, but now I feel like it's almost it's an annual issue.
Well, yeah, it's an issue. It's how bad is it going to get, right? It's not if there's going to be fires.
Yeah, if the Albertans, I lived in Kelowna for 7 years. The Albertans, they flock to Kelowna in the July, August, September, every other license plate going down Harvey, the main drag there. It's Alberta. And to your point, do the habits change? You know, they have their annual vacation in this place. This is just what they do. And, you know, how many years in a row does it have to get
smoked out
before you say we need a new place? And I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're an investor and you're not thinking about that and calculating that as part of your risk, I don't think you're doing proper due diligence.
Let's talk about areas you like. So we've kind of covered. So the U.S., you're big in the U.S. Are there areas in BC that you're kind of really excited about?
On the development side, we've primarily been in the Lower Mainland. And when I say Lower, it's not just certainly not just Vancouver proper here. Any Fraser Valley, like even our industrial stuff, very little of it's actually. I don't think one project is in Vancouver proper. It's your Surrey, your Langley, your Richmond. That's where most of the land is, right? One of the deals that we're doing right now has a plot of land in Kamloops and for an industrial deal, and the numbers are quite good. Personally, I spent quite a bit of time. I have grandparents in Kamloops, so as a kid, I spent a lot of time there. It's not the place for me. But numbers don't lie.
I was going to say, but it is a transportation hub.
Yes. I've got a brother in Merritt that makes the same argument to me. Sorry, Merritt. For the Merritt listeners here, we love you guys. But there's some of the numbers out of the interior there. If you can go and do some industrial, we like in a lot of different markets. Though residential here, primarily we've been involved in the Lower Mainland and some on Vancouver Island as well. We just finished up a project in Langford that did quite well for investors as well. So for us, we're kind of more major centers. One thing that I prefer to stay out of the resource markets. I told you I got started in Northeast BC. I actually bought a number of properties up there as well. I still own them, kind of five, six years in. And I think that market might make a comeback. It might.
Mm-hmm.
Though it would have been much lower stress if I just bought them in Vancouver and sold it for twice as much as I paid for it, right. 5 years ago. So one thing that got inserted into our due diligence process because of Northeast BC was, it's not just everyone looks at where the jobs are being created. And I think it's prudent. If you don't have a job, you don't have the population growth. People got to work. One thing though that we looked at is if you can count on change, if change is going to be the new normal and digitization of jobs, like our jobs are able to be done more remote than ever before, right? So we don't think that's a trend that's going to change, where jobs are going to be more easily done remotely. And so the big question comes, if people are untethered to their job location, where do they choose to live? So just desirability has skyrocketed up our criteria for investment markets. Like if the jobs were to disappear tomorrow, would people find a way to live there? And I think that's important here. And I guess that's the principle I'll leave instead of kind of going into what markets do we like? I do think that that's something, if I were an investor looking at any market, I would strongly consider.
Yeah, that's a really interesting framing of that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there, but Justin, can you stick around for the five lighthearted questions to end the show? We have changed them since we last had you on there, and there might be a couple that are the same, but I'm sure your answers have changed. It's been 3 years, so.
Let's go.
All right, so question number one is, what is your favorite bar or restaurant? So it doesn't have to be in anywhere in the Lower Mainland.
My favorite restaurant is not too far from here, actually. It's I don't know if I'm pronouncing it wrong. It's Lin Restaurant. And if
vegetarian.
No, Chinese. No?
Is it? Oh, I thought it was Lin's was vegetarian. Oh yeah, no, it is. Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah, if you like Xiaolongbao, it's like the Japanese steamed. I think they're not for steamed buns, but it's like a meat in a paste. Definitely not vegetarian. It's like
it's the furthest
meat, the
meat thing.
Is literally the only reason. This is my favorite restaurant. That's my go-to.
That's my wife's every Christmas. She orders from there.
Does she get the steamed buns?
I think she does. Yeah, she's a big meat eater.
Good. Just eat them when they're hot. It's not the same when it's cold.
This is definitely a new question, Justin. Favorite band or song? What were you listening to while you're driving in from White Rock?
I was talking to my brother the whole way in from White Rock.
Touché.
Favorite band or song? You want to know what has changed as I've aged? I actually like older. The older I get, the older the songs I listen to get.
Yeah.
And one that just it does different things to me is still Hotel California.
Ah, interesting.
The Eagles.
Yeah, I don't know. It's got just, I don't know what it is. Maybe someone can explain to me what I'm feeling when I listen to Hotel California, but it's something.
One thing's for sure. In about 20 years, you'll be probably listening to Big Band.
I do feel like, though, you have mentioned some things that kind of seem profound, and that's another one. The older you get, the older the music. I feel like that's for me as well.
Really?
Yeah, I'm like, is that actually a thing?
I guess listening to Celtic music from the 1800s.
That a boy.
Just wait till I hit 60.
yeah, exactly. What is one book you would recommend?
I think this one was asked last time here, I think, but his favorite book I'd recommend, if you haven't read Seven Habits, I know it's going to sound so bad because it probably gets said so often here, though I will argue it's for a reason. Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
That's a great one.
That's a classic. One piece of advice you would give your 18-year-old self?
Do your best, get better, and let go of the result.
That's a great one. Last but not least, something you have bought for under $1,500 that has had a positive impact on your life. We sometimes say life-changing, but...
No, I actually have had a good one recently. I bought a water rower, and traditionally I just ride on the stationary bike, and I'm not, I like variety in a lot of things in my life. I like a variety of food. I like variety of music. When I work out, I literally want to do one thing. I don't want to do anything other than that one thing. And I just want to do it over and over again. And the water rower has been just fantastic. It's the one of the ones that's got the water sound when you pull on it. It's almost therapeutic that way. It works the legs, the core, the arms.
How does it work the legs?
Because you're pushing.
Yeah, it's like,
when you row, you put, it's all, yeah, it's all okay. In your legs. It's on a slide.
I've never rowed.
Yeah, it's just like a sliding seat. They say it's about 60% legs, the power, 20% from your core and 20% from your arms. And then you get the cardio. Then you're getting cardio at the same time, right? So I never buy that kind of equipment new. I always just go on, you know, Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist to get it. Because in my opinion, most exercise equipment is just new stuff that's been moved from the store to a house.
Say, it's never used.
Never used. Yeah.
So it's kind of funny. The guy, we just got under that $1,500. He had listed it for $1,300 on, it was originally $1,500. He lowered it to $1,300. And at $1,300, I told him I'd take it. And I never got an answer back. And I'm thinking, geez, you know, I must have lost it. And then I saw like a week and a half later, he'd lowered the price to $1,000. And I'm thinking, what happened here? So I message him again, telling him I'll take it for $1,000. Yeah. And he said, oh, great, thanks. And so, yeah, I went and bought it from him for $1,000. And
and his junk folder saved him or lost him $300, I guess.
I probably should have told him. I don't know. Maybe.
Hey, no. You're a deal finder.
I found a deal. I found a deal. It was he was moving the next day, so he had to get rid of it. And he thanked me because I was the only one that didn't negotiate further from the $1,000.
And those, like, just so I understand, because the rowing machine, you actually, your form gets better over time too, right? Like, are you becoming a better rower, do you think?
I don't know. I've had it for about a month. If anybody gets one, I'd recommend watching a video on YouTube that talks about form, just to make sure that you're exercising all the right muscles. And there's a technique to it, right? About, you know, it's legs first, and then it's core second, and then it's arms third, and then it's in reverse, right?
Right.
As you go back into
the... How do you know this?
So I've done a little bit of this before, but one thing I've noticed is that when my form was corrected, the number that you can watch that goes down went down dramatically, which means I'm getting more power, I guess, out of each row. And the other thing is if you do it correctly, it's a way better workout than if your form is poor.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too is just, you know, it's longevity, right? So it's not, rowing isn't, depending on the sport here, but at least for when I do it, it's not like a 20-minute thing, right? I put on a show or do 45 minutes to an hour. So if you've got poor form, you know, back starts to
hurt yourself.
Middle-aged man problems.
That's a great one though. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, right on. I remember last time, Justin, I feel like one of the questions might've been a habit. And I think I just remember you talked about walking a lot in the five wire last time. Anyway, I don't know. It sounds like you're not doing much walking.
This didn't happen, Matt. This was a dream.
That was an old habit. Really? That didn't happen?
I did. I walked last night and listened to a book. Still do it, though not as habitual as when we were talking the last time. One habit that's been very good for me and my business is a morning huddle. There was a while during COVID where we didn't run one. Essentially, it's you get together with the main people on your team, pick a point in the day, usually the morning is the best, and get on the same page. So we share our top three priorities for the day. And it's usually a five, 10 minute meeting, get off. And it's quite incredible how that increases the alignment of the whole team. So any business owners on here, if you're not having some kind of daily communication that's working towards a longer term goal and where you can bring those priorities down to daily priorities, that's been a huge game changer for us.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll leave it there. Justin, how can people find out more about what you're doing and of course about Hawkeye Wealth?
Yeah, just come to the website, hawkeyewealth.com, and hopefully you guys can have a link there in the podcast and I would love to chat.
Fantastic. And I would just, I'll plug your email blasts because they're terrific. And that's where a lot of the deals go out, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And if I'd say about 3/4 of the deals go out to the email database, there's a chunk of deals that don't go out to the database though. And the reason is some of the teams or groups that we work with, the operators, they like to keep the private in private equity.
Sure.
So, you know, we like to get to know you too. If we get to know you, we know exactly what deals to send your way. So you get on the list and then reach out, introduce yourself and we'll see what we can find for you.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Justin.
Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Justin Smith.
president and founder of Hawkeye Wealth.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Justin. So great having him in the studio and seeing him.
It was good seeing him. We haven't seen him for a long time.
I always learn so much from him. And it's a pleasure having him on the program.
Absolutely thoughtful guy, for sure. That was great.
What else do we have for the week before we go, Matt?
What else do we have? Well, I'm just thinking, Brady D's almost like Norm from Cheers, but for the entire community of Strathcona.
He is. Well, we were just talking about this. I feel like McLean Park, there's some, I don't even know if it's legal to drink beer in McLean Park.
I feel like after Ken Sim was on the show, it's become clear that it's not allowed still because the Vancouver Park Board can't get their act together.
I think there are certain parks. We should really do our homework on this because there are certain parks that are allowed drinking and then there are certain parks that are not. But the ones that are not would surprise you because like the one thing about the, I would say, a lot of the parks, kind of in East Van in general, a lot of them are right beside microbreweries.
Right,
so it's like the perfect thing to grab like a 4-pack of tall boys and then
Instead of going inside, you just head over to a park,
right? Yeah. So they've kind of become like parks in Vancouver, almost like the, if you're like in your 30s plus, even in your 20s, mid 20s, it's a place to go have a beer
now. It's a nice spot.
It's a nice spot to sit. But we were joking about how Brady D is kind of like he's always got a, it's almost like it's fastened to his hand.
Yeah. And he's pretty specific with his tastes. As are most people in Strathcona.
Well, he drinks a lot of Superflux.
Yeah, which is crazy to me.
Well, which is, it's to me, I don't think I could have probably 2 Superfluxes. They're always like 8-9% or something.
Yeah,
right?
No, it's it takes a specific type of person to be able to drink those.
Well, you got to be 6'4", 6'5". Yeah. That's the key. Yeah, exactly. And you got to have a hollow
lip.
That's
like a Coors Light for Brady D.
That's a Coors Light. He's very operational. He's very operational. What else do we got for the day?
What else do we have before we go? We got Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. We got the live wire. This has pre-sale VIP projects. Commercial pre-sale VIP projects. We got residential pre-sale VIP projects. We got deal of the month. We got stats. The September stats just came out. A little bit surprising, actually, but those were out along with sales ratio to everyone on the live wire immediately. We also got private client services.
Because Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free at your fingertips. We've got a good friend of the show. I just was talking to him. He said, well, let me just go back through my PCS. I'll run the numbers quick. Not a realtor.
Wow.
But this is the best thing about
PCS. That's a type of resource.
He's got all the sold data. We have him set up on a variety of different searches. He monitors his area. He monitors other areas. If you're a real estate nerd and you're not on PCS, what the hell are you doing?
Or even if you just want to find out what prices are in a neighborhood. It's a great resource, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Also, we should say, Adam, we are not great at social media. You're better than me. I'm terrible.
Yeah.
But we have really upped our Instagram game.
Well, Melissa Moretti on our team is, we said to her, she was doing a lot of social media on her own page.
That's right.
Do you call it a page? Account.
Right.
Account.
Stories. She was doing stories.
She was doing a lot of stories. So we said, why don't you do some on the VREP Instagram? Because we've got a decent amount of followers on VREP, but I would imagine we would have a lot more
if we actually ever put
content up there. She's been hitting it out of the park over there.
Lots of positive feedback.
It's my favorite account to monitor now. Is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
Oh, interesting.
Account. Tons of useful information for buyers and for sellers. And then also a lot of stuff like market stats. We're going to be running a poll soon about best investments, best areas to invest, multiple choice questions. So if you are on Instagram and you don't follow Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, it's at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
Is that true?
The Instagram, it is. You're thinking of our Twitter handle?
Oh,
Anyways, just type it in. You'll find us. And thanks for following and thanks for listening.
And if you want to talk about private client services, real estate, or anything else, give me a shout, 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We also got that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Have a great week, guys. And we're back with some other amazing content next week. I can't wait.
Hits just keep on coming.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio.
Subscribe today.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.